The latest book from author Mike Pelacek, Johnny Moon. I've read JFK assassination fiction by Don DeLillo and Norman Mailer and can tell you that this new novel not only is Mike's best book yet, it's much better than DeLillo's and Mailer's efforts to do justice to the most important event in U.S. history. Kevin Barrett, American activist and radio host. Johnny Moon tells the story of a third grader in a Catholic school who wants to do what President John F. Kennedy asked us all to do. Johnny has told his classmates he wants to go to the moon. In fact, he wants to be the first one on the moon. And so the kids brand him with the nickname Johnny Moon. Sister M&M's is Johnny's teacher. Her sister was in Dallas that day, right up close to the limousine taking pictures just as it happened. She saw some things that did not get reported back in Johnny's hometown Daily News. Sister M&M's and Johnny and the third grade Sacred Heart class decide to tell the truth about what happened. Harvey Wasserman on Johnny Moon. Mike Pelacek is a master of mixing the ethos of the heartland with great moments in history. His Johnny Moon evokes that time in our national story when getting to our favorite satellite was mated with the generation's coming of age. Order your copy of Johnny Moon at createspace.com. Order your copy of Johnny Moon at createspace.com. The latest book from author Mike Pelacek, Johnny Moon. What does it mean to be free? What has the war economy done to the lives of Americans? Join others for all the solutions at thespiritualun.org because another world is possible. No human being is an enemy of another human being. War is a manufactured and artificial state. There is another way to live in this world through a new system that is uplifting to all. Let's go to a higher love. What did Jesus really teach? Did he teach onward Christian soldiers and bomb one another? No. John F. Kennedy, Robert F. Kennedy, Mahatma Gandhi, Martin Luther King Jr., Abraham Lincoln, our founding fathers, and you, your neighbors, all reaching for the best part of the human spirit. TheSpiritualUN.org, come together with us, carrying forward this nation's founders' universal ideals through the rejection of revenge, aggression, racism, war, and the debt slavery system. Real men don't kill. War and the debt slavery system is a crime against us all, against God, against all life, and is not fit for a progressive world. Join together here at thespiritualun.org and we will build that new world for the 99% of us, without any leaders, corrupt as they are, because in the new system that is uplifting to all, they aren't necessary anymore. thespiritualun.org. WorldNewsTrust.com is a new site that is trying to define the new mainstream. Their founder, Francis Goodwin, is a veteran journalist who set out on his own a few years ago and has slowly carved out a niche. What does the site do? It tells the truth and provides a place for intelligent columnists to talk about what's really happening in America. It's a good site with people who care about what's going on in America and the world. It's a great site with many loyal writers, including Ramsey Baroud, Harvey Wasserman, Mickey Z. There are too many to list them all. Some content is published on World News Trust first, some is published elsewhere and copied to World News Trust. We also welcome back World News Trust, who continue to support our show and host our website. Visit World News Trust for a dose of news with enlightened and informed opinion. It's not like Fox or CNN or the New York Times. It's World News Trust, defining the new mainstream in online journalism. Visit them today and tell them the New American Dream Radio Show sent you. WorldNewsTrust.com.
It's just a ride. And we can change it anytime we want. It's only a choice. No effort, no work, no job, no savings of money. A choice right now between fear and love. The eyes of fear want you to put bigger locks on your door, buy guns, close yourself off. The eyes of love instead see all of us as one. Here's what we can do to change the world right now to a better ride. Take all that money we spend on weapons and defense each year and instead spend it feeding, clothing, and educating the poor of the world, which it would many times over, not one human being excluded, and we can explore space together, both inner and outer, forever in peace.
And now, coming to you live from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, in Duluth, Minnesota, Dreaming the New American Dream, with your hosts, Chuck Gregory and Mike Pelacek.
Welcome to the New American Dream Radio Show.
I wasn't always a bigot,
In the dated and somewhat propagandistic musical play, South Pacific, Oscar Hammerstein II penned the immortal lyrics to Richard Rodgers' song, You've Got to Be Taught. The sentiment bears remembering today, well over 50 years later. Bigotry may be better hidden in the politically correct world of 2012, but that just makes it more insidious and less honest. You've got to be taught to hate and fear. You've got to be taught from year to year. It's got to be drummed in your dear little ear. You've got to be carefully taught. It goes on like that. It's a great song. You ought to look it up on YouTube. I was quite young when I was taught bigotry. Years blur together now, since many more have passed since I was small. I suspect I was about 7 years old. I think I was in second grade at school. My parents were as open-minded as they knew how to be. They tried to instill a belief that all people were of equal value, deserved the same respect. But my school teachers were a different story. They thought that skin color might rub off and make a white person dirty if he got too close to a Negro. They probably wouldn't use the term nigger out loud, but that's what they were thinking. They might have said colored rather than Negro, though. I'm not sure. Language changes significantly, even in the short lifespan of a human being. Today, maybe we say African-American, and in the days of civil rights marches, black was preferred. I remember a specific incident that laid the groundwork for my bigotry. I need to tell you a bit more about my childhood first, though, before telling you how my innocence came to an end. I was a happy child, a bit spoiled since I was the only one. My parents were older than those of my playmates. They used to joke that they were married on the 3rd of March and I popped out on the 23rd. Then they'd let on that 7 years passed in between. Mom was 30 and Dad 42 when they were married, so I wasn't exactly a planned child. Dad had gone through mumps for a third time. It wasn't supposed to be possible for him to have a child, but somehow I came along. Many of my early memories have me happily eating my supper while they enjoyed their cocktails. They liked to eat late, past my bedtime. They always treated me as a little person, not a child. They expected me to think on my own. They respected the opinions I developed. They were patient, well, most of the time. They were happy to tell me what I asked. They'd read to me or later with me. Mostly, they just included me in their conversation. When they had friends over, I'd serve the hors d'oeuvres and bask in the spotlight, enjoying my place in this adult society. I was not very well prepared to interact with my peers. Children can be among the cruelest of creatures, singling out those who are different in any way. My difference was not in skin color or appearance, but rather in attitude. I knew books and show tunes and folk music. The other kids knew sports and a new kind of popular music. We didn't understand each other very well at all. I was often unwell. I experienced virtually every one of the childhood diseases prevalent at the time. Measles, German measles, mumps, chicken pox, even scarlet fever. The chicken pox came in first grade and threatened to make me miss a performance of Peter Pan starring my very favorite actress, Mary Martin. I made a huge fuss. I was allowed to go even though I wasn't back to normal health. I'm pretty sure I was past the contagious stage. My parents were conscientious enough to make sure I didn't infect anybody else, but I didn't have much resistance. It nearly cost me my life. I got much sicker. Finally, after consulting with a doctor, my mother rushed me to Children's Hospital in Cincinnati and had asthmatic pneumonia. They put me in an oxygen tent while turning me into a pincushion with penicillin shots. My mom planted herself in a chair in my hospital room for the entire 6 week stay. Twice a priest from our church visited and said words I didn't quite understand. Finally, we went to visit my grandmother in Ormond Beach, Florida for a couple of months while I recuperated, no longer quite in such danger, but still getting my twice daily shots. It was at this time I learned the incredible strength of sunlight. I could almost feel its power healing me straight through my skin. I missed about two-thirds of first grade, but was still promoted at the end of the year. While visiting Goga, my grandmother's name was Golda, but one of the other grandkids had christened her Gogo, and it stuck. I spent a great deal of time with Jim, the yard man. Jim was a huge black man, incredible strength, and a great intelligence. Once I saw him pick up an upright piano by himself and hold it while people tried to decide where it should go. He was perhaps a bit subservient to white folk, although I didn't realize it at the time. I just thought he was extremely polite. He treated me very well, often taking me fishing with him in his little boat. I remember being very impressed that he could drain an entire bottle of soda pop in one gulp. Jim would buy me shrimp for bait. He made me put it on the hook myself, but he was always there to help. We'd go to a little island, really more of a sandbar, where he'd catch fiddler crabs that he used for bait. I tried to catch them too, but I didn't like it when they pinched my fingers. So I never got to use them on my line. After a couple of hours of fishing, I usually would have caught nothing. I was way too jittery, and you know, I was a kid. Jim would have at least a half dozen sheephead, with most of which would go to my grandmother for cooking. He'd clean them for her, of course. I learned to love eating fish, just as I love fishing with Jim. I usually find the pastime boring today. Perhaps it's because I still never catch anything. Sometimes I'd play with Joe, Jim's son, who was about my age. I think that was his name. A few years have passed. I'm not completely sure of details like that, but I don't even remember what we did, just that we had a good time together. I think I felt more part of Jim's family than my own. I never realized that his appearance was supposed to make some difference in my perception of him, you know, not until later. When I was in second grade, I was a bit of an outcast. My experience was different from the other kids. Combination of older parents and a huge gap in the previous school year led to misunderstanding. I dealt with it by bonding with others who were not popular. One of these was a girl, I think her name was Teresa. She had skin the color of weak coffee. Not the dark black of Jim and his family, but most certainly not white. I was drawn to her, perhaps because she reminded me of the good times I'd had in Florida. We played together every recess. One day, Teresa and I hid under the bleachers. We were fascinated by the differences in our appearance and decided to explore what was under the clothes, you know, gender differences, and we'd already dismissed the contrast of skin color. I think the entire school, at least the entire class, turned out to shame us. Teacher was terribly shocked. Teresa was expected to be bad, but I was supposed to know better. How could I even think of playing with a colored child? What was wrong with me or something deficient in my upbringing? No. My parents were called to the school to share in my shame. They were castigated, threatened, given little or no chance to defend themselves. I watched and learned that they were powerless in the face of this onslaught. I learned to be a bigot because I saw the strength of the teacher and the principal, the weakness of my own parents. I didn't realize by remaining silent, they were demonstrating strength of their own. I didn't realize that until many years later. I saw that weakness, though, and I used it. From then on, I was able to get anything I wanted because I'd seen what to do. My father paddled me just one time. I told him he was using his size and strength to impose his will on me, and it wasn't fair. And the poor man was afraid to ever reprimand me after that. I've spent the rest of my life trying to restore the innocence of my youth. The seed of bigotry planted that day will never be totally extirpated from my psyche. As I've relearned acceptance of others and developed a non-judgmental attitude toward their behavior, my appreciation of other people has grown. But there will always be that little doubt going back to that one traumatic incident. Very impressionable when you're a kid. There will always be that voice inside questioning my action and my motivation. If I'm respectful and accepting of those who appear different, I still hear echoes from that teacher. If I act a bigot, I hear the same inner voice of my parents asking why I can't treat others as I wish to be treated myself. The dichotomy will never go away. Even though I long ago grew to respect my parents' wisdom in this area, even though I long since learned that what my teacher and her principal did was not only wrong, but terribly, terribly damaging. Perhaps this is why I've always had such a problem with arbitrary rules, such little respect for authority figures. Perhaps I should even thank them for exposing their lack of depth to me at such an impressionable age. I wasn't always a bigot. I was taught. And now my friend and co-host, Mike Palachek, an American Life.
Chuck, tonight we welcome Paul Corman Roberts in Oakland, California, and Eileen Fleming in Florida. Well, if you listen to the news, the storyline goes on. To me, it's like a book you can skim. The details, not important. I try not to listen to the news, I guess, to tell you the truth. I go back to what story I've been telling forever is that I remember after I heard the burial, working overnight at a group home that Osama bin Laden had been buried at sea. I wondered to myself, is this really happening? I guess that it is. And we have the chore or opportunity, however you might see it, to view this from close up, which I see as the coming of American fascism. I think we're right in the right in that time period when a person I've been talking about for weeks, William Shire, who did a radio show from Berlin, and he also wrote a book called The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich. And another person who I'm really kind of impressed with is Sophie Scholl. Sophie Scholl was a member of the White Rose Resistance. And she had, what they did was she and her brother and others had their resistance was writing. They wrote leaflets and they distributed them. And for one particular place, they distributed the leaflets was in the, I think it was in a university in Munich, and they were arrested for that, and eventually they were beheaded, these young people, beheaded in Nazi Germany for distributing leaflets. She was convicted of high treason. It was the University of Munich with her brother Hans. And this is a quote from Sophie Scholl. The real damage is done by those millions who want to survive. The honest men who just want to be left in peace. Those who don't want their little lives disturbed by anything bigger than themselves. Those with no sides and no causes. Those who don't like to make waves or enemies. Those for whom freedom, honor, truth, and principles are only literature. Those who live small, mate small, die small. It's a reductionist approach to life. If you keep it small, you'll keep it under control. If you don't make any noise, the boogeyman won't find you. But it's all an illusion because they die too. Those people who roll up their spirits into tiny little balls so as to be safe. Safe? Safe from what? Life is always on the edge of death. Narrow streets lead to the same place as wide avenues. And a little candle burns itself out just like a flaming torch does. I choose my own way to burn. Well, we are also in kind of the same situation as Sophie Scholl was and William Shire was so many years ago, I believe we are, in the pre-fascist America. And I think we have those people. I'd also like to throw the name Franz Jagerstatter in there as examples. And they were not afraid. So what we can do from that is maybe we also cannot be afraid.
What if we find that equality is the greatest gift that God gave humans? What if we find that no human being is an enemy of another human being? That it has just been politics all along? What if all politics and politicians were jettisoned from our planet? What if we lived simply through our great principles and universal ideals? What if we flowed our human life through the all-American founding of liberty and happiness for all? What if the American founding blueprint allowed us the right progress of all people, without sin for the religious and without error for the rational? What if we put money to work simply for the good stewardship of the planet and the caring of all people? What if our new oil on the planet is simply human creativity and that all energy is free, non-harmful, and universal? What if we governed ourselves without a master as the fulfillment of the American founder's vision? What if we decided it was love's turn on the planet? Join together here at thespiritualun.org and we will build that new world for the 99% of us. Thespiritualun.org.
And now for our ninth grade first period civics moment. Please follow along as I read from page one of our textbook, Democracy in America. To change things, because we're a free and open society, unlike so many others, write your congressman, vote, or if you really want to go out on the ledge, march in a large peaceful protest. If you don't participate, you have no right to complain. But because you may someday realize these things are useless, you'll have to find some extracurricular way to ever actually participate in the running of the country. Let's just say, perhaps by some extraordinary happenstance of money or talent or circumstance, you might actually find you have a voice. That's where your biggest decision will be made. Either shut up and live the good American life, or persist in your selfish pursuits. And if you become powerful enough to actually change things and continue to persist in your childish notion of democracy, someone will shoot you between the eyes or in the back of the head, and we'll speak no more about you. Now, please stand quietly next to your desk for the Pledge of Allegiance. When you pay your taxes to the United States government for its military, you get depressed. When you get depressed, you listen to Barry Manilow. When you listen to Barry Manilow, you have dreams about Mandy Johnson in the chicken shed in 1978. When you have dreams about Mandy Johnson in the chicken shed in 1978, you wake up to try to find Mandy Johnson on Facebook. When you try to find Mandy Johnson on Facebook, you drive to Scottsbluff, Nebraska, and find out the chicken shed is now the Chicken Shed Restaurant. Mandy Johnson is the owner. She's been eating chicken and mashed potatoes nine times a day since 1979. And you have to crawl out the tiny window in the men's restroom to escape from Scottsbluff. Don't have to crawl out the tiny window of the men's restroom to escape from Scottsbluff. Join the National War Tax Resistance Community.
And now get ready to be released for the summer movie season, My Big Fat American Auschwitz. Muslims and terrorists and commies, oh my. Owlheads and Negroes and homos and liberals and tinfoils and wetbacks. Poor people and you people and they people, oh my. Eagles and beagles and Edelweiss. Sauerkraut and six-packs. My big fat American Auschwitz. Coming soon.
Our first guest tonight is Paul Corman Roberts, a poet from Oakland, California. He's visited with us before, and I hope you remember a bit. He's a longtime poetry editor for Cherry Bleeds. He's a labor union activist, arts activist, and he resides in Oakland, California. Paul, we welcome you to the New American Dream Radio Show.
Thank you so much, Mike. It's, as always, it's an honor to be here.
Well, good. So, I think last time we talked about Occupy Oakland quite a bit. Is that still happening?
Yeah, it is still happening, although it's got a lot more low-key. A lot of people have gone to jail, and there are still General Assembly meetings happening, and as from what I can tell, they're sort of jumping from place to place, having different assembly sites for the time being. But Yeah, I think they're at a point where they're trying to figure out a way to be a little more proactive, or to be a little more, I don't know, maybe proactive is not the right word. I think they're trying to be a little more focused and a little more strategic. There's only so many downtown windows you can break before the local populace starts getting, hey, you know, it's you're kind of cramping on our everyday life too. But they've had a lot of support. I mean, they really peaked when we had the general strike, and they shut down, you know, the Oakland ports for a good solid 36 hours with the support of teachers and health workers and other blue-collar workers and unionized labor. I mean, those truck drivers got down there. They got down to the port and saw, you know, what they saw were the not a line of transients, not a line of, you know, sort of ne'er-do-wells just looking to cause, you know, rabble or cause trouble, but they saw, you know, the working blood of our society, you know, crossing, creating their own picket line. And that was the largest general strike that had taken place on the West Coast since 1936 or 1938, I guess it was, when the last big one like that went down. So they've been kind of unfocused and kind of trying to find their footing since that time. I mean, it was a great thing, but you know, there has been a spinoff group that says, well, no, we want to pursue a different strategy. And so this is a point of concern because it's like, well, now here's a movement that maybe a lot of people had a lot of hope in. Where does it go now? Is it able to reconcile its differences? Is it able to move forward? And you know, it's still a tough time. We're still waiting to see.
Well, if it doesn't go forward, then I guess we can say that the police state has won out. They've scared everybody off.
Yeah, that would certainly be a pretty logical conclusion to come to. And sadly, I think it's a conclusion a lot of people have already come to. It has to be the willingness to go out there and take those lumps and not people feel stressed out. They have to get to a point where they feel like they have nothing more to lose. I that's what I see with a lot of the folks involved with Occupy. When I've gone down there and I've talked to people, you know, there's some people who've been there a few days and they're sitting there and I can see them struggling with their decision. I've got to, you know, go find a job, or I've got to go, you know, they feel the stress of a kind of indentured servitude. I mean, I think that's where the corporate state's been really successful in our society, is turning what were once good jobs, solid jobs, if perhaps unenlightened or unsustainable or however you want to look at it in that sense. But at the same time, you know, the idea was that there was this, you know, per the name of your show, this American dream, this thing that could be realized. And people have known that that's been kind of a false idol for a long time. But now it's just like your life, your job, you're being tied to the means of being in a state of constant debt. And that is, you know, to me, that's not different than the indentured servitudes that were, you know, plentiful and handed out like candy around the time of slavery, you know?
Exactly. Do you have a poem or two you'd like to read to us tonight?
I can read you my occupation poem. I'll be happy to read you my occupation poem. I'd love to. It's this is called Whatever Happened to Our Us. Occupier, oh occupier, please tell me, has anything ever appeared more empty than the plots where our tents stood and the now sterilized plazas, playing host only to this long, tubular wind which has swept away the final stand of an admittedly perceived righteousness, like a giant mechanized vacuum operated by men in hoodies and ski masks, the police of the underbelly with their rallying cry, Akapanas can't be arch, wrapped our sleeping bags around us like a noose, packages to be dragged away by uniformed sanitation mercenaries, leaving only these darkish stains and the view of a red traffic light in the 14th and Ogawa intersection, beneath which a Prius with a Got Hope bumper sticker idles. Do you remember on this timeline between Waco 93 and the composting of our walls and grimy floor, the rebels don't care enough to keep clean anymore? Buried here are the fossils of the sexual revolution among the heaps of rot strewn about our Occupy. There's a forgotten labor movement crumpled at the bottom of a hippie's duffel bag, a civil rights mandate saturated with pizza grease, the only movement visible now is toward the horrible clarity of sobriety. We've been squatting beneath the canvas barricades for so long now, long enough for history to go all fuzzy via time exposure, long enough to believe maybe recess is over, and maybe the bell rang, and maybe we just missed it. Do you remember when the enemy's advanced battalions arrived in their matching Circle K polyester, when they surrounded us and just camped out, swilling their crazy horse malt liquor and processing legalese? Our bastions were shelled by batteries of forms, our turrets strafed by business return envelopes, an armada of B-1 bureaucratic bombers dumping their impressive payloads of competing deregulated utility bills and eviction notices, and we laughed, and we pointed in their faces, and we called them names. And so they rolled out their high-pressure hoses and opened them upon our ranks, in turn dousing and bruising us with millions of gallons of CNN agitprop, and still we took our eternal youth for granted. So some stuck their heads out and cried, all we want is our sex, drugs, and rock and roll to be on sale down at the mall. And others stuck their necks out to protest this was not at all what the rest of us wanted, only to have their heads blown off by Wall Street columnists ensconced in sniper's nests. Then came the diplomatic concierge of Hollywood agents, recording industry executives, and Silicon Valley angels, waving mall itineraries and proclaiming, we've consulted with Jesus, and he says one out of three ain't bad. And so even fewer stuck their necks out to cry, we'll take it. And then those few of us left stuck our necks out to protest this was even less than what the rest of us wanted. Investment speculators wielding invisible profit certainties of mass destruction ethnically cleansed us of our communities, our families, and our lives. I remember looking for a way out for those few left, then eventually a way out for only one. I remember seeing daylight through cracks in a wall, clinging to its seduction of offered passage, only to watch it fade behind the mounting paperwork mortars that once seemed so harmless. I remember these things again and again, too many times to count. Like I said, it's just the way things cycle here in the encampment. I think the power's been turned off, the escape route's blocked, and the urban khaki stormtroopers have gapped the plumbing, and that's all right, because those few of us left who didn't want to go through a social cleansing anyway, for us it would have been unsatisfactory, knowing what awaits the party lizard that manages to survive till the gray dawn light. We'd rather wallow in the stink of our bunker. We'd rather smile, 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 and wait for the barricades we grew, and the tents we sat down, and the community we tried to build to copulate with the diplomats, the insurance Gestapo, and all the special interest market forces in one shining moment of clarity when nothing stands between our sheer existence and their lust to consume and reprogram us in their image. What a fine moment that is going to be. End poem.
Amazing.
Thank you. And that was the abridged version too. It's actually longer than that. But I oh, my goodness.
Oh, wow. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mike. I really appreciate the opportunity to share that with you and your listeners. It's special.
It is. It really is. Please tell our listeners where they could listen to you in person, where they can find you on the internet, and then we're going to have to call it a night after that.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you, right now, I'm involved in organizing a literary scavenger hunt through the streets of Oakland, and hopefully we'll do some occupying of our own. So you can, folks can find us online at www.beastcrawl.tumblr.com. That's beastcrawl.tumblr.com.
Okay. Excellent. We thank you for coming back to our show, and we hope to talk to you again in 2 or 3 months.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Mike. Take care now.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, and have a good night.
WorldNewsTrust.com is a news site that is trying to define the new mainstream. Their founder, Francis Goodwin, is a veteran journalist who set out on his own a few years ago and has slowly carved out a niche. What does the site do? It tells the truth and provides a place for intelligent columnists to talk about what's really happening in America. It's a good site with people who care about what's going on in America and the world. It's a great site with many loyal writers, including Ramsey Baroud, Harvey Wasserman, Mickey Z. There are too many to list them all. Some content is published on World News Trust first, some is published elsewhere and copied to World News Trust. We also welcome back World News Trust, who continue to support our show and host our website. Visit World News Trust for a dose of news with enlightened and informed opinion. It's not like Fox or CNN or the New York Times. It's World News Trust, defining the new mainstream in online journalism. Visit them today and tell them the New American Dream Radio Show sent you. WorldNewsTrust.com.
This portion of our program brought to you by Powder Melt Gonads gives Democrats the torpor to do what they always do in the big yellow dog box. Heavens, they're pasty and felicitous. And on your favorite channels this week, are you smarter than a prison guard? If you've got satellite, you might be able to catch the European version. Are you smarter than an American?
Now available online. Everything I learned in kindergarten is all I ever learned. And new in a 9-disc package, we guarantee you will learn how to speak American. At the end of the day, stay on the same page. Take it to the next level. Keep it real. Be awesome and give 110%. Be on time. Work hard. Work 9 jobs. Keep your head down. Keep your mouth shut. Stand for the anthem and the flag. Watch the game in the living room after the big meal. Keep your mouth shut about anything that matters. But if you order today, a bonus package is available online from How to Become a Human Being. You will learn such useful phrases as stick it up your ass, eat me, and I quit. Get started today. Now I'd like to welcome our second guest, Eileen Fleming. Eileen Fleming is in Florida, I believe. She's a candidate. She's a writer. She's an activist. She's also an advocate for Mordecai Vanunu. And we'd like to learn more about all these topics. Eileen, are you there? Hello, Eileen, are you there?
Thank you so much, Mike, for this opportunity, and especially because we're pre-taping this on what in the Christian world is Holy Thursday, Maundy Thursday, and all week on my website, weareWideAwake.org. I've been writing about Jesus and Israel, Palestine, and Vanunu, and what's going on here. My understanding is this interview will broadcast on the 19th of April, and on 21 April, that Saturday, marks the first day of the 9th year. Israel's whistleblower, Mordecai Vanunu, has been denied the right to leave the state on top of doing 18 years behind bars for telling the truth 26 years ago about Israel's weapons of mass destruction. And so what's happening, there's a global call out in the world for people on or before 21 April to hold public readings of the news words from prison. If people are on Facebook, they can get there. But I'll have everything on my website the week that this is airing, weareWideAwake.org. And I will be holding the happening at the Strawberry Fields in Central Park, New York, at around noon on 21 April Saturday. So maybe some of your New York listeners might be around.
Eileen, is Vanunu in prison right now, or what's his status?
All right. Vanunu is in East Jerusalem. His last public comment was March 18th, and he said, I'm going to quote exactly, it's under, I posted it on my website, and it is March 18th, message from Vanunu regarding Iran and Israel's weapons of mass destruction. He wrote, I'm doing very well back in East Jerusalem. He had moved back there after being in Tel Aviv for a little bit over a year. And as I said, he's been freed from behind bars since April 21, 2004. He says, well, he writes, I'm still waiting to my freedom now after 26 years. And the way to prevent any war with Iran is by demanding, making many programs about Vanunu's Freedom Now struggle, publishing again all the interviews, videos, and Dimona photos, telling Israel the first step in the path for Middle East disarmament is let Vanunu go now. And I've been trying to get that message out to big boy media since March 18th. I've gotten nowhere, but I'm heading to New York, and I'm going to spend some time trying to get through to the news desks of the major media outlets, because Before the taping of 30 Minutes with Vanunu, which was taped a few weeks after Vanunu's freedom of speech trial began in January of 2006, Vanunu said to me, all the big media has wanted to interview him, 60 Minutes, CNN, everybody, but all their editors say no because Vanunu's under restriction. So they don't want problems with Israel. They have to go through censors. But the security establishment, which is really behind the vendetta against Vanunu, they still haven't gotten over Vanunu exposing their lax security in the Dimona in 1986. So they've just been trying to make him as miserable as possible, keeping him captive there. And we've got Dimona photos that are done by the Israeli media. They published it on Israeli Hebrew TV. They took some of the news photos, 56 of them, that the London Sunday Times still has, all of them. And the Israeli media superimposed them, 3D animation, whatever. So I'll have all that on my website the week that this is airing, so people can easily access all this information.
Eileen, if you can hear me, has he ever made a statement giving an opinion about Israel's possible involvement in 9/11?
No, I've never asked him about that, so I know of no statement that he's ever made. And also, there's always been reporting that he said that Israel was behind the JFK assassination, and when I asked him that, Vanunu said, yes, that was reported, but that is not what he said. That's what he told me, so...
Okay. Could you, if you have any more to add about him, that's fine, but could you also tell us about your candidacy, what you're running for, and how that's going?
Yes, thank you so very much. Basically, I am still struggling to run as a no-party affiliated candidate for U.S. House of Representatives. And I've got a great local plan that the locals love, but they can't get near my international, my global view. And I have to say, when it comes to presidential candidates, I am much more aligned with Ron Paul on his international policies and his drug policies. So, you know, I've got a tough road to hoe because I am basically in Tea Party country here, Christian Zionism, central. But anyway, one of my global issue is, and that my run for U.S. House can be accessed, followed at EileenFleming.org. And basically, my point here with the Vanunu thing is that in April 1999, 36 members of the U.S. House of Representatives signed a letter calling for Vanunu's release from prison because they believed, quote, we have a duty to stand up for men and women like Vanunu who dare to articulate a brighter vision for humanity, end quote. President Clinton responded with a public statement expressing concern for Vanunu and the need for Israel and other non-parties to the Non-Proliferation Treaty to adhere to it and accept IAEA safeguards. And ever since, the silence has been deafening. Most Americans have not heard about Vanunu, but they can learn a lot just going to EileenFleming.org or Wake.org, and the book is Beyond Nuclear, Mordecai Vanunu's Freedom of Speech Trial, and this is also my life as a muckraker, 2005-2010. I was writing my first book in 2005 when I met Vanunu in Jerusalem, and I wrote him into it. It was a historical fiction of a 1948 refugee from the Galilee, Keep Hope Alive. That's my first book. And then when Vanunu's freedom of speech trial began on January 25, 2006, which was It was scheduled to be about a week or two before that, but at the last minute, Israel rescheduled it so it would fall the same day as the Palestinian elections. In 2006, we remember when they democratically and transparently elected Hamas as a you know, really a message to the West that the PA is just another layer of the occupation. So that's my global message to Israel, and it could not get away with their nuclear ambiguity without American collusion. Helen Thomas's first and last question to President Obama was about Middle East nuclear weapons, and he responded he did not want to speculate. There's no need to speculate because, you know, the State Department has reams of documentation about Israel's nuclear facility going back to, you know, JFK, if not before.
Eileen, thank you very much. And could you tell us once more in closing where people can go to help out with your candidacy?
Yes, EileenFleming.org.
And do you have enough petitions to get on the ballot, or do you need help with that too?
Oh, yeah, listen, I am still, I've got about 1,200. We're talking here a couple of weeks before this airs. I've got to have them all in by May 7th. I do not have to announce what district I'm going to run for until June. We're getting two new districts here in Florida. So I'm also searching for a district that can support somebody who's willing and able and ready and has been standing up to American policy. It's our foreign policy, which is endangering this homeland, and we need to address that. We need to address our hypocrisy regarding nuclear weapons. We've got billions in the budget to continue with our nuclear arsenal, and we're supposed to be dismantling it. And in my district where I live right now, in Lake County, Florida, we have 3,000 students registered as homeless in the school district. And this is a fairly affluent area. You would never know it. So it's a huge issue. We've got plenty of money, but it's where we're putting it down is got to be addressed. And, you know, the billions that have been going to Israel, not mentioning all the loans that will never get paid back, plus all the interest we've lost, it's just trillions of dollars. We cannot afford this special relationship economically or morally.
Eileen, thank you very much. And could you tell us just one last time briefly about the Strawberry Fields event?
Oh, yes. Thank you so much. I'm going to be in New York at Strawberry Fields in Central Park. I believe it's the West Side. But anyway, I will be there around noonish and just having a quiet but public reading of some of the Nunu's words from prison. If you can't be there, I will again have them on my website. And people anywhere can do the same thing at their churches, you know, at a bar, any place you are, and just get the word out about Vanunu if he's still stuck there. Vanunu is 9 years. It begins on 21 April, that he's been walking around free in Israel, Jerusalem, and Tel Aviv, but not free enough to leave. All he's wanted is to fade into the world, get a job, have a home, have a family. He's going to be 58 this October. So anything anybody can do to help free Vanunu, petition your politicians, and burn everything you can and disseminate the information and request your media to address this. It's huge. The media should be keeping us out of war, not beating the drum for another Middle East war.
And thank you for your work, and I hope you'll be able to come back with us in a little bit and give us an update. You have a good night, okay?
Oh, thank you so much for the opportunity, and just thank you again, and all the best.
Okay, see you. Bye.
All right, bye.
What if we find that equality is the greatest gift that God gave humans? What if we find that no human being is an enemy of another human being? That it has just been politics all along? What if all politics and politicians were jettisoned from our planet? What if we lived simply through our great principles and universal ideals? What if we flowed our human life through the all-American founding of liberty and happiness for all? What if the American founding blueprint allowed us the right progress of all people, without sin for the religious and without error for the rational? What if we put money to work simply for the good stewardship of the planet and the caring of all people? What if our new oil on the planet is simply human creativity and that all energy is free, non-harmful, and universal? What if we governed ourselves without a master as the fulfillment of the American founders' vision? What if we decided it was love's turn on the planet? Join together here at thespiritualun.org, and we will build that new world for the 99% of us. Thespiritualun.org.
Just in, this text message from the rest of the world to America. Your blinker is on.
Funding for tonight's program is being provided in part by GoBarbaraBush.com, as well as the United States Navy, a global force for good. United States Army, be all you can be. United States Air Force, peace is our profession. And the United States Marines, the few, the proud, the brave. Because we could never sell you the truth. And this public service announcement brought to you by Rolaids and the American Spelling Bee Council of Bowling Green. How do you spell Al-Qaeda? Can you use that in a sentence, please? Yes. Al-Qaeda, the evil towel heads, what drove the planes into the towers and the Pentagon, and now we have to take our clothes off to fly in an airplane. And they do more stuff every day, it seems, and we are scared of them, so we don't care if we have freedom of the speech or nothing, because we are Americans, and we have car racing, and we can still kill animals, and we have our guns to keep us safe from deer and elk. And we really don't know our elbows from our behinds because we want our guns, and we salute the troops and the flag and the prayer parade and say, way to go, killing those kids in the mountains over there, because it was Bush who did 9/11 and not those kids, and we really don't know nothing. The word origin, please. Evil. How do you spell Al-Qaeda? We spell it CIA every time. Well, it's been a long week in Mount Liberty, Nebraska, my hometown. The flags are at half-staff at the post office in Bueller Chevrolet, and the high school, and also Taco John's to commemorate and celebrate the upcoming anniversary of the death of Osama bin Laden. And also the burial at sea of Cruella de Vil, the Wicked Witch of the West, buried at sea, as well as Captain Hook, buried at sea, and the Big Bad Wolf, buried at sea. A while back, we heard some stories about Kate King, the daughter of Jack Robert King, the local internet radio show host. Well, Jack Robert King is long gone, killed by the police, but Kate is still around, and she sent some transcripts of some of JRK's radio shows and some homemade notes to tell the story of their family. She sent it to the local newspaper, but they didn't want it. So she sent them to us.
Morning, folks. This Looking for Bigfoot Radio. Is this heaven? No, it's Nebraska. We have to talk real loud because about 91% of the population is over the age of 80. They drive slow. They vote Republican. They pay for birthday cards by counting out change at the counter from a coin purse, penny by penny, by nickel, by dime. Oh, well, that was another penny. They're afraid of Mexicans. If you're young or have a brain, get in a car now. Drive very fast. Or run. Good morning, Lompoc, California, Terre Haute, Indiana, Fort Madison, Iowa, Stillwater, Minnesota, Lincoln, Nebraska, Sioux Falls, South Dakota, El Reno, Oklahoma, and good morning to all you other prison towns. You smell like death. There's an odor in the downtown area like the stench of a pecking plant, a lingering fog at about 500 feet that blocks the sun. And you know, there's this guy I knew who had this basement shelter. It really was a bomb shelter from the 50s. It was stocked with all kinds of food and wine and beer waiting for the Y2K debacle. And there on top of the cases of macaroni and cheese was this pile of homemade snowshoes. He made them out of electrical conduit and stuff, weaved them with great care and skill, and bent them into different sizes for his family at the end of the road, at the end of the world, when I guess snow would fall forever because the dates on our computers weren't quite right. But he could have bought snowshoes on the internet, but he just made them as if he needed to be doing something at the end of time. He could have made bombs or booby traps, but he made snowshoes. He wanted to be able to walk in the deep snow, deeper than we ever had before. He had those snowshoes down there. He was ready. Snowshoes. Bush and his buddies get a hoot. They're out there planning to take over the world, discussing dollars in the billions. There's this guy with snowshoes and 13 cases of generic beer in his basement, thinking he's got it made in the shade. And remember, communism is out there somewhere. You dived under your desk 100 times to find it, and it wasn't there. You killed a little yellow man, cut open his skull and his brain to find it, but it wasn't there. You know, they told us communism was such a major threat to us. We couldn't eat snow for a while because of suspected communist nuclear weapons testing in the atmosphere. Well, we ate snow anyway. We prayed in church and then back in the classroom for strength at the hour of need when we'd be subjected to the forces of evil demanding we renounce our faith. Never happened. But we did give a pass to the Warren Commission. We did elect Ronald Reagan. We did elect Bush and Bush. We did give a pass to the 9/11 Commission. And now they're always also saying our votes aren't being counted. Well, this morning the show is being brought to you by Left Behind Adult Diapers of Bloomington, Indiana. You a questionable conservative Christian? Is there a chance that the rapture might not include you after all? Have you been caught with your hand where it shouldn't have been? Maybe you better just get on down and get yourself a 24-pack of Left Behind, available in red, white, and blue in all sizes. Left Behind adult diapers, because you're not really sure, are you? All the things a real guy does. You obsess over that? You're lucky. He pays bills on the kitchen table in just his t-shirt and jeans and socks. He welds when he has to, sometimes just for kicks. Fellowships regularly at the local church, local Elks Lodge. The real guy bounces kids and dogs and old ladies on his knee. Sits through the whole Thanksgiving meal and football game, never thinking of taking a walk to get away for a while from all those damn crazy bastards. Guy jokes with the mechanics when he picks up his car, totes a case of 10W-40 home under his arm, and fixes the toilet. Where's our real guy on the morning that the United States of America bombs Iraq? Where is he when Abu Ghraib is discovered, when the election is stolen, when Wellstone's killed? If these items don't also draw his attention, then our real guy hero turns out to be the villain of the story. This is Jack Robert King, looking for Bigfoot Radio. And how are you? We'll see you next week at this time if they don't find us or find out what we hid in the garage.
That's the news from Mount Liberty, where all the soldiers are thugs, all the Democrats are cowards, and all the Homeland Security COINTELPRO hearing device buds on all the trees and bushes are about average.
And that wraps up another New American Dream Radio show. We thank you for listening. Hope you'll come back same time, same place next week. Hope you'll stay tuned for Black Op Radio, hosted by our producer, Len Osanek. It's always a really good show. We'd like to thank James Boomy, the author of June 2508. Visit his site at June2508.com. I'd like to thank World News Trust. Great spot for news you can trust. WorldNewsTrust.com. We'd like to also thank the SpiritualUN.org. Thank you and good night, Mike.
Good night, Chuck. Stay warm. And good night, Mrs. Calabash. Good night, Todd Beamer. And good night, Barbara Olson, wherever you are.
What if we find that equality is the greatest gift that God gave humans? What if we find that no human being is an enemy of another human being if it's just been politics all along? What if all politics and politicians were jettisoned from our planet? What if we lived simply through our great principles and universal ideals? What if we flowed our human life through all American founding of liberty and happiness for all? What if the American founding blueprint allowed us the right progress of all people, without sin for the religious and without error for the rational? What if we put money to work simply for the good stewardship of the planet and the caring of all people? What if our new oil on the planet is simply human creativity and that is all energy free, non-harmful, and universal? What if we governed ourselves without a master as the fulfillment of the American Founders version? What if we decided it was love's turn on the planet? Join together here at thespiritualun.org and we will build that new world for the 99% of us. Thespiritualun.org. WorldNewsTrust.com is a new site that is trying to define the new mainstream. Their founder, Francis Goodwin, is a veteran journalist who set out on his own a few years ago and has slowly carved out a niche. What does the site do? It tells the truth and provides a place for intelligent columnists to talk about what's really happening in America. It's a good site with people who care about what's going on in America and the world. It's a great site with many loyal writers, including Ramsey Baroud, Harvey Wasserman, Mickey Z. There are too many to list them all. Some content is published on World News Trust first, some is published elsewhere and copied to World News Trust. We also welcome back World News Trust, who continue to support our show and host our website. Visit World News Trust for a dose of news with enlightened and informed opinion. It's not like Fox or CNN or the New York Times. It's World News Trust, defining the new mainstream in online journalism. Visit them today and tell them the new American Dream Radio Show sent you. WorldNewsTrust.com. What does it mean to be free? What has the war economy done to the lives of Americans? Join others for all the solutions at thespiritualun.org, because another world is possible. No human being is an enemy of another human being. War is a manufactured and artificial state. There is another way to live in this world through a new system that is uplifting to all. Let's go to a higher love. What did Jesus really teach? Did he teach onward Christian soldiers and bomb one another? No. John F. Kennedy, Robert F. Kennedy, Mahatma Gandhi, Martin Luther King Jr., Abraham Lincoln, our founding fathers, and you, your neighbors, all reaching for the best part of the human spirit. TheSpiritualUN.org. Come together with us, carrying forward this nation's founders' universal ideals through the rejection of revenge, aggression, racism, war, and the debt slavery system. Real men don't kill. War and the debt slavery system is a crime against us all, against God, against all life, and is not fit for a progressive world. Join together here at thespiritualun.org and we will build that new world for the 99% of us, without any leaders, corrupt as they are, because in the new system that is uplifting to all, they aren't necessary anymore. thespiritualun.org.